Hello and welcome to the Recovering God podcast. This is a platform to explore issues that affect the faith lives of Christian women. We hope you find this podcast helpful.
Hello, Recovering God podcast listeners. You've just got me today, Amy. I've got one of my dear friends that I met on Twitter. You'll have to apologise because she's American, but what can we do about that? So we're just going to dive right in. I'm going to let her do her introduction about herself. So yes, this is Natalie. Hello, Natalie. And do you want to introduce yourself to our listeners?
Well, hi, everybody. My name is Natalie Drew. I live, as Amy said, over here in America on the Victoria side of the pond. And I live here in Michigan, and I've known Amy for several years through Twitter. And I guess real quick about me, I'm currently an HR professional, or working on that. So that's really married, have two kids, and just really enjoying being here.
Yeah, and your amazing wife, shout out to Heather, because she's amazing. Yeah.
I'm fine.
Right, so I'm going to just, I wanted to start off something about your history, because when a little bit after I met you on Twitter, you put this thread, and I swear this thread has been one of the most powerful testimonies I've ever read. It really made me think an awful lot for a long time. So I don't want to give too much away, because obviously I want you to talk about it. But yeah, I just wanted to ask about your childhood through to adulthood as a Christian and in the church, various churches obviously, and how your ideas of God and church has evolved over time.
Yeah. So I was born and raised in what they call Independent Fundamental Baptist. I don't know if they have that over in the UK.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, we do. Okay. Have that, yeah.
You know, I often refer to it as a cult, because it's really kind of what it is, and they operate in much the same way. So that's the world I was born in. Actually, I think as I was probably 3 or 4 when I went to one of their big churches, pastored by Bob Gray out of Longview, Texas. And it is a highly controlled, highly abusive world where, you know, we see this kind of rise of like the patriarchal sphere within Christianity again. And to the IFB world, what we see of like Theo Bros and what kind of like the terms we use for them on in social media, they would be liberal compared to that. Bob Jones University was a liberal university to the people that I grew up with. So, I grew up in a highly spiritually, emotionally, physically abusive world where, you know, I've been writing a lot lately, and I talk about how they have such a warped view of God. This very malevolent, you know, it's almost that Jonathan Edwards, God is gleefully dangling us over the pits of hell, just looking for that chance to smite and destroy us and to punish us. And that really, so in that IFB world, when you have that coming from the pulpits, and in that IFB world where the pastor, they're often referred to as the man of God, they are literally the mouthpiece of God in that world. And it extends to the home. The father is the mouthpiece of God in the home. And so when you worship a cruel, violent, malevolent God, and you hear that from the, when you're sitting in the church pews every Sunday morning, every Sunday night, every Wednesday night, and God forbid when, during revival weeks, and you sit there and you're inundated with that message. God is smiting us. God is harming us because he loves us. And it eventually trickles into the home. Fathers hit their children out of love. Husbands hit their wives out of love, because that's who God is in that world. So that's kind of the world I grew up in. You know, it is very restrictive. Like when it comes to gender roles, you know, women especially are to be silent and submissive and subservient, and children are the same. We are all there to be seen and not heard. And so I grew up in that, and there were, I think it was probably about fifth or sixth grade that we had like a slight flirtation with the Southern Baptist Church, which was at the time a huge relief. And so we went in that into that world for a couple years, actually. And while we may have been hearing a slightly different, a slightly toned down version from the pulpits of who that God was, none of that changed in the home. We still had a very fundamentalist home. And then we eventually found our way back into the IFB world. And that's where I was through junior year of high school, halfway through junior year of high school. We were attending the IFB church school. And in that world, I was always an outsider, not for the obvious reasons of being a trans woman, but because I wanted to go to a state school. I wanted to go to a public state university. It had always been my dream to go to Texas A&M University. And in that world, you go to Hiles Anderson College, you go to Pensacola Christian College, or you go to Crown College in Tennessee. And so we were always on the outside in terms of how we were perceived in the church.
And to say back then, because you just said about being a trans woman, that wasn't on the cards at that moment in time. So no. You were living as a man, and yes. You know, and so you, yeah. So it's not like no. You wanted to go there because you already had these, yeah. You know, yeah. So I just wanted, yeah.
Clarify and that. So yes, I was probably about five or six when I started kind of. You know, it was the 1980s. I was born in 79. So in the mid-1980s, you didn't really have the terminology for any of this,
yeah.
Especially in that world, in that IFB world. And so you didn't have the terminology for it. So I didn't have any way to vocalize it. And even if I did, I had nobody safe to talk to. Yeah. I would have been physically beaten or sent to a children's home or... kicked out of home had I come out as a child. And so, and there was always that underlying fear that, you know, you feel this disconnect because you don't want to kind of pursue that hard line path for your life, but you also don't feel, and so that kind of creates a disconnect from you and your peers. But then you're also like, I have this secret. This shameful secret, this one that makes you hate yourself so much. I would pray every night, especially like once I hit my teens, I would pray every night, like, God, just do a miracle. Like, you know, I believe that God can do these miracles. And I'm like, just let me wake up a girl. Let me wake up a girl and change everybody's memories. Nobody has to know. Like, you're God, you can do whatever you want. God doesn't really work like that though. And so, but I would always end up my, if you can't do that, or if you won't do that, just kill me. It was an absolute torture growing up, but especially because I also had nobody to talk to. And so that's kind of the world I kind of went through. And I reached, you know, we moved back down to Texas. At the time we were living in Indiana, and we moved back down to Texas so I could go to college. And going to college was this kind of, you know, it's like this weird tense moment. I was raised as a person of faith. Even if it was an abusive faith, I was raised as a person of that faith. And it was a lot of times early on, I kind of kept my faith out of fear. I was afraid of being wrong. And so I would still try to go to church when I was in college, and, you know, but I was clearly, you know, I began to be a cultural Christian. If you would ask me, yeah, I'm a Christian, but you would see no fruit in my life. I was angry. I was violent. I was getting in fights in school, even in college. I was being required to go to anger management and all of this. And then
Sorry,
I joined.
just to interrupt, because this is one thing that really impacted me when part of your testimony was to, if you kind of said that you were angry and you were getting in bar fights and fights and stuff, yet the church, the IFB church, still kind of accepted you as
Oh.
if, well, and I think that, and obviously knowing what now, obviously they wouldn't accept you, like, and it's just like this idea that being a fighting as a male is like, well, that's within God's okay. But it's like it was just this really
Oh,
interesting.
absolutely. There was never at any point, nobody ever said, "Hey, are you really a Christian? Because of you're really violent." I remember in fifth grade, I had gotten to at least 50 fights. Thankfully, that was in a day and time when kids weren't getting arrested for school fights. Nowadays, especially in America, that's kind of the path we're going because school shootings, and that's a whole different issue. But the violence was never, it was never condemned. Obviously they would say, "Don't get in fights at school," but it was, everybody knew who I was. Everybody knew that I was angry, that I was violent, but that's what men are supposed to be.
Yeah, so a little bit of a slap on the wrist, naughty boy type thing, but
It's
it's
boys
not
being
really
boys.
his sin, is it? Because he's just a boy, and then bloke,
And so, the first chance I got to get out of that world, I kind of went, I clung to the label of Christian. But even when I was in the army for 6 years, I chose, and that was another thing. When I was getting in trouble for getting in fights and stuff in college, then you start to realize, oh, wait, I can be violent and st without getting in trouble. If I just join the army, you are held up as a hero. The more violent you are, the more heroic you are. And so I went into that world, and I think from I was in for about 6 years. I was an infantry sergeant, and I could probably count on one hand the number of times we went to church over a 6 year period. And so we had really disconnected from our faith. We were Christians in name only, but there was n like we I it was the furthest thing from my radar. And then I got out, and I was still angry. I was struggling with suicidal ideation. Some of that was combat, and a lot of that was who I, the internal struggles I had dealt with my entire life. And we moved to, I got a job in HR at a company in Houston, Texas, and we moved to a suburb, and it just so happened to be across the street from a church. And it was a Church of Christ denomination. And that's what my wife Heather grew up as, a Church of Christ. And so we're like, okay, one Sunday we're like, let's go ahead and visit. Because we knew that whenever our parents came to visit us, they would be like, "Hey, have y'all visited that church across the street?" And so we wanted to just be able to say, "Yeah, we visited, not for us." But we visited, and for the first time in my life, I walked into a church and I felt what it was like to be loved. And it was this. Just this moment that I will never forget, and it lit something. I would sit there, Heather and I would lay in bed at night reading our Bible. We would talk about what we're reading, and we would, like really, to me, a great starting point is just that, starting with those red letters, starting with Jesus, and then kind of going from there and really going to the root of what this is all about. And I would email our pastor, like, "Hey, am I crazy for thinking this?" I would see what Jesus would say about nonviolence, about turning the other cheek, loving your enemies, don't repay evil with evil. Those who take up the sword will die, perish by the sword. All of the, and I'm like, wait, what if Jesus is actually serious here? And my pastor's like, "No, you're not crazy. Church of Christ, at least prior to World War II, had a very strong pacifist tradition. And so we really kind of just lit that fire, and really nonviolence was what one that that resolved so much of my PTSD issues from combat. And it helped me really kind of reconcile a lot of that. And so we became, we got very fervent, to use a very Christian term. Yeah. We got on fire for God.
Yeah, and, oh yeah, I'm a charismatic. I've heard that many times.
And so then we were at that church and we loved it. And we were the people, you know, we were part of that core group of, we were, the doors were open, we were there. And then our pastor left. And that was kind of a heartbreaking moment. He left to go be a chaplain in the Navy. And I remember him and I had had a, we had lunch about, he wanted to get my thoughts about that because he knew I was, one, I had a military background, but two, that I'm a pacifist. And like I told him, no place more than the military needs God. Like there's not a lot of God in that world. And, you know, we idolize that world, but we don't really think like, yeah, it's a brutal world with a lot of broken people. And so, he left and then we started noticing changes in the church. And I think our final point, our breaking point with them was we were there and I was organizing an event for Raw Tools. They're an organization that takes guns and turns them into garden tools. And, you know, so we were organizing and they told us we can host the event at the church, but we cannot advertise. They didn't want to be seen as taking sides, which I was fine with. I think we should take sides, but I was fine with. And you know, I understand the reality of living in Texas at the time and how they, that how they are with guns. But a week before the event that took months to plan that we weren't allowed to advertise, they had had a youth mission trip auction where they auctioned off two gun baskets.
Only in America, Natalie, only in America.
Only in America will we fund mission trips with guns.
With guns, oh my word.
And that was the last time we ever set foot in that church. And we love the people there. We are still friends with a lot of the people there. But for me, it was like, and I sent them an email to the entire staff. I'm like, look, I think you all need to publicly repent for this. I think what you did, this isn't about me being offended because you didn't allow me to advertise my event, but you did this. I think what you did was wrong. And especially
that
since
went down well.
Yeah. Oh yeah. a couple of the shepherds, to their credit, reached out to me and wanted to meet. But it was a lot of, I'm sorry you were offended. Okay. Well, that's fine. We love you all, but this is just not our, where we need to be. And then I got a job shortly thereafter and we moved about an hour and a half away. And again, we kind of fell back into this pattern of there wasn't a church for that we kind of felt good with in the smaller community that we moved to. It was very Baptist, and I was never going to go to a Baptist church again. It was very Baptist, and it was very Church of Christ. And none of the places kind of shared some of the theology that were, I guess, the most important for us. And then COVID happened. And, you know, we kind of, now everything was shut down and we probably went several years with maybe once, a quarter going to church, but even during that period, our faith was still strong. We didn't have a body to go to fellowship with. And, it was in that period where I transitioned, and a lot of that transition was made possible because of kind of where I was with my faith and kind of my perception of God. And
we'd been accepted. It seems quite powerful that when you walked into that church, for me it feels like, yeah, you walked in there and the Holy Spirit and God just accepted, yeah, you for who you were. Like that's what it comes across as. Yeah. And it's lovely that the physical realm, you know, of people, yeah, you know, being lovely to guys, but it feels like you walked in there and you felt like God's, I mean, I'm trying to put words in your mouth, but it feels, yeah, like You went, walked in there and God accepted you for who you were. And I think that, you know, and that's quite a powerful experience, isn't it? Because it can carry you for a long time when you have a powerful experience like that of acceptance and love.
Absolutely. And, you know, it was that one of those just really life-changing moments. And then we moved up to Michigan, and I remember driving around up here my first weekend with my friend Linnell and her family. And I was just like, man, there are a lot of Reformed churches up here. And she's like, yeah, this is kind of like the Reformed capital of America. I'm like, oh. And my only experience with Reformed Christians was on Twitter.
Oh, yeah,
and
that's not a great experience, right?
And I'm just like, oh, my gosh, where have I just moved to? And we found a church up here, and it's so funny because I am not a Calvinist. But we found this church that it's this perfect combination of very, you know, they're a conservative theologically church. They're, you know, even when it comes to the issue of affirming versus non-affirming, their kind of position is like everybody, we want everybody to be welcome here. We want everybody to feel that they can fellowship together, regardless of where you are. We're not going to be isolating ourselves into silos. And they're egalitarian, which is a big thing for us. And so now we go to a Reformed, a Christian Reformed church here in Michigan. And it's, again, been one of those experiences, much like the Church of Christ in Houston, where you walk in and you're just like, oh, this is it. These are people who love, and the way that they have just wrapped their arms around us has just been, it has made, like when I lost my job recently, immediately people, I posted on Facebook, well, I'm unemployed now. And I didn't give anything because there are some other issues going on related to the termination. But I didn't really say anything. I didn't. And we've had two people in our church already say, hey, if y'all have to sell the house, you can move in with us. Because they don't want us to have to be in a situation where we have to move back to Texas. We had,
well, it's family, isn't it? That's family. Yeah. And that's what we're called to be, right? Like friendships and family in the church.
You know, and we got a card from somebody, still have no idea who this was. And they're, you know, the way our church is set up, every family has like their own little mailbox. And one day
that's
we got
cute.
A card.
I love that idea. Sorry.
Oh, yeah.
That's so cute.
Yeah. The whole sanctuary is set up like almost like a first century Palestinian marketplace, where you, in the back, you have all, and it's actually brilliant and very intentional with how they set it up. And they wanted to promote community and fellowship and, you know, even how they do communion. We got a card in the mail at our house, and they said, hey, check your box on Sunday. We check the box, and I'm sitting there in our chair, in our seat at church, and I open it, and they gave us a gift and a large amount of money. And I start weeping. I have no idea who gave us this. Mm. And it's just that kind of, I'm like, this church is they take it seriously. They are the hands and feet of Jesus Christ. And being in a church like that, where you can be safe to, you know, we don't have to agree on everything. I know that there are people who I sit next to who are not affirming, and I am 100% okay with that. I get a lot of flack about that on Twitter. people don't like that. I'm okay with it. But, you know, I want our church to be that place. And
it's your conviction with God as well, isn't it? It's also your conviction with God.
Yeah,
like I think sometimes we worry about everyone else, and it's just fundamentalism, right? When you go back to your previous thing, it's like the conviction is we need to all have the same opinion, all same thoughts, because this is the way God is. And it's just like, well, actually, there's a lot more nuance there. And I only have to worry about my conviction about the way I live in. And if someone wants to judge me, well, that's actually on them. And the Bible says that, you know, don't judge people. Well, if you're going to judge, I can't make them not judge me. As long as they're not being, you know, obviously me and stuff. But one of the things I wanted to say about that when you talk about church is that I love when you discuss like the idea of orthodox, you know, quite Christianity, in terms of, I think sometimes I think you've got frustrated when the assumption is you have to be sort of liberal in, again, these terms are so, you know, not very helpful anyway, but like you can't be orthodox, you know, Christian in terms of believing that Christ rose from the dead and was from a virgin birth and all those kind of things. And and I think that's, you know, and I think that's really unfair, that why do you have to be quote unquote culturally liberal? Again, this is not very helpful. I'm probably not very good with my language, you know, being a trans woman, but that means you can't be like orthodox sort of Christian, you know. It's like you can't do both of those things. They don't. And I think that's one of the frustrations I've seen with you, because you're like, well, I am, so get over it, you know.
This past year was a tough year. I lost a lot of friendships because of this. I am largely kind of isolated away from even the Christian trans community because of this, because, you know, I think it is important to believe in the physical resurrection of Christ. I believe it is important to believe in the incarnation, that Jesus is fully God and fully human. I think these are very important tenets of our faith. But when I hear people say, you know, things like, oh, well, you know, the creeds are exclusionary. Well, yeah, that's what creeds are. Like, this is what we believe. Now, if you don't want to believe that, that's fine. But this is what, like, fundamental Christian, not fundamentalist, but those tenets of the faith, you know, especially when it comes to Trinitarian theology. And, you know, I think it's, so I would, and that's what made it hard to find a church, because we wanted to find a place that, and I agree with you, I hate the labels. I hate affirming, non-affirming, side A, side B, conservative, liberal, because they carry so much baggage with them. But finding a church that stayed true to the fundamentals of our faith, and allowed liberty on the non-essentials, for lack of better terms. You know, I know you and I, we don't necessarily agree. I'm going to eventually
get to what don't we agree on, that, Ali? What don't we agree on? I was slightly making out of you.
I am a universalist.
Universalism.
but, you know, I think it's one of those points that, you know, I've seen Trey Ferguson, Pastor Trey, tweeting a lot lately and talking a lot about atonement theories. And, you know, I saw somebody say, well, there's no right atonement theory because they're all rooted in abuse. And I could not have rolled my eyes more. You know, and yes, I think stuff like penal substitution can be. And I think a lot of that kind of informs how we perceive God. But there, you know, understanding that we're all just trying to understand, like,
trying to understand God, right? Yeah. Like, and like, the fact is, you don't want to be put in a box by, you know, fundamentalist far-right people. So, but you also don't want to put other people in a box. And it's like, it's just this idea that, you know, there is just many things going on in Christianity and being human, it's very complex. And just don't want to, you just want to hold things lightly in your hands that you think that can be held lightly. So, you know, and I think that I think we need more of that when it comes to society nowadays with cancel culture and stuff like that. But I don't want to go on. I want to pivot as well now, Natalie. So I'm going to give my next question 20 minutes later. It's all good. Americans love to talk, don't you?
I told you I ramble.
I'm only joking. So I suppose, obviously, you know, our podcast is about Christian feminism and, you know, all things Christian and feminism. And so I suppose I would ask you, because we have a lot of different answers to this, do you consider yourself a Christian feminist? And if not, you know, why not? And what does it mean to you if you do call yourself a Christian feminist, obviously?
I would say I'm a feminist. I am a Christian who believes in feminism. You know, but I think it really, like you mentioned, it depends on how we define feminism. I think people should be treated with the same dignity and respect as everybody. Men and women, let's treat them with all the same, give the same opportunity. You know, I don't think our roles in society, our roles in the church are determined by genitals. I think that is such a very lazy type of way to approach it. Now, I think there are people who do kind of hold that view and aren't lazy about it. They've done a lot of work, and hey, this is where they have came to in good faith. I believe that there are people like that. But then I see our church when we had a pastor, she recently left us. She wanted to move back to Ireland with her family as their parents are getting older. And when you see the way the young women in the church were on her last day, that's why you see the importance of feminism. These were young women, my daughter included, who were just, you could tell what Pastor Karen had meant to them as young women. And, you know, so to me, that's the kind of feminism, you know, seeing women who are deserving and in those places, and we're not making these judgments about them based solely on, you know, their chromosomes or their genitals or however we're defining that.
Yeah, about their gifts and their character.
Yes, it is about the, you know, and so I am absolutely, you know, in that sense, absolutely 100% Christian feminist, because you see it throughout. You see it throughout the Bible. These strong women who, you know, it's not merely the, you know, I was raised up hearing, Deborah only was Deborah because the men didn't do their job. You know, but you see essentially the first evangelist, the first ones to tell the good news of the resurrection were women. You see the role that women played in the early church when Paul talked in his letters. You see all of this, and you know, to me, that's what you're, like you mentioned, it's recognition of people's gifts and talents. And you know, I know that there's a lot of people who say, oh, well, you know, you need to have women on the staff. You need to have queer people on the staff. You know, all that. I'm like, no, you need to have people who have the gifts needed for these positions, regardless of what gender they are. And I want, that's what I want, where people are able to fully utilize the gifts that God has given them to further the kingdom of God, regardless of what gender they are.
So I suppose probably my last couple of questions for you. Have you got any projects in the pipeline at the moment? Like you said about writing, have you got a book coming?
I am currently working on a book pitch. That was a publishing company had initially reached out to me coming up on 2 years ago now. It's hard to write a memoir when there's just so much, you know, crying involved as you dredge all that stuff up. But I am working on a book pitch. I have recently just sent my first two chapters over to the agent. I'm really hoping on doing that and getting that project underway to share my story. And, you know, just yesterday, we did this thing at work where we have a DE&I director at our company. And, we went around kind of saying things that we appreciate about each other. And she had said, she's like, Natalie, I love how you came in here with your authentic self. And she was like, not, you know, you came in and were just unapologetic. Like you were very open and honest and transparent about your deep faith and your views on nonviolence. And I'm like, oh, this is what I want to be known for. I don't, you know, it wasn't just about, oh yeah, you're a trans person. That is, to me, the least interesting thing about me. And that's what I want my book to share. I want my book to tell the story of, you know, here is somebody who was born in a highly abusive fundamentalist world. And I'm going to share all the horrible stuff about me as well that a lot of people don't know yet. But I want to be honest about kind of that story and how it's led to me being somebody who I don't do boxes. I don't fit in anybody's boxes. I'm, you know, the more progressive side doesn't really like me because I'm over here saying, yeah, guys, maybe we should show some grace. And the more conservative side is over here hating me because, yeah, you're trans. And so I want that story to come across to where for the people, because I have had people in my DMs reach out and tell me how much, you know, they appreciate that I kind of walk in that middle. And I try to kind of have the, I want it to be about grace and not just the grace that God has shown me, but the grace I've had to show myself, the grace my wife has shown me, and the way it has all interplayed within my, throughout my life. And so that's my big project. And I'm hoping to maybe get some traction on that and that this will be the year. And so, yeah, that's what I'm working on right now.
Exciting. All right. Well, just lastly then, because I don't want to take too much of your time up. Where can people find you on social media?
So
if you were interested in that, or how can people get in contact or whatever?
I'm primarily on Twitter. That's kind of my home, and unfortunately, and that my Twitter handle is at NatGrace79. So NatGrace 79. So if you're bored and you want to get irritated by what I say, by all means,
never.
Yeah,
never get bored again. You're great on Twitter. Well, thank you ever so much for taking the time to come and chat to us. It's been amazing, and I am really looking forward to the book. Hopefully it'll be on one of those, I don't know if I'm allowed to say, like, the brand stuff, but the where you have to speak your book out, yeah? Because I'm going to listen to it rather than actually reading a bit.
If there is going to be an audiobook, it will not be my voice. But Heather, you do that.
But yeah, no, thanks ever so much for your time, and yeah, I'm sure people will connect with you on social media. So yeah, thanks ever so much.
Thank you so much. You know, I love you to death, and I will always jump at any chance to talk with you. And so yeah, I look forward to this, and thank you for having me, and sorry for rambling on my early answers.
No, you're good. All right, thanks for that. Bye.
All right, bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Recovering God podcast. Please remember to rate, subscribe, and tell others who you think will be interested. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Recovering God, or contact us by email at recoveringgodpodcast@gmail.com.